But at last, in his untraceable evolutions, the white whale so crossed and recrossed, and in a thousand ways entangled the slack of the three lines now fast to him, that they foreshortened and, of themselves, warped the devoted boats toward the planted irons in him. Though now for a moment the whale drew aside a little, as if to rally for a more tremendous charge. Seizing that opportunity, Ahab first paid out more line, and then was rapidly hauling and jerking in upon it again, hoping that way to disencumber it of some snarls, when lo, a sight more savage than the embattled teeth of sharks. Caught and twisted, corkscrewed in the mazes of the line, loose harpoons and lances, with all their bristling barbs and points, came flashing and dripping up to the chocks in the bows of Ahab's boat. Only one thing could be done. Seizing the boat knife, he critically reached within, through, and then without the rays of steel, dragged in the line beyond, passed it inboard to the bowsman, and then, twice sundering the rope near the chocks, dropped the intercepted faggot of steel into the sea, and all was fast again. That instant the white whale made a sudden rush among the remaining tangles of the other lines. By so doing, irresistibly dragged the more involved boats of Stubb and Flask toward his flukes, dashed them together like two rolling husks on a surf-beaten beach, and then, diving down into the sea, disappeared in a boiling maelstrom, in which for a space the odorous cedar chips of the wrecks danced round and round like the grated nutmeg in a swiftly stirred bowl of punch. While the two crews were yet circling in the waters, reaching out after the revolving line tubs, oars, and other floating furniture, while a slope little flask bobbed up and down like an empty vial, twitching his legs upward to escape the dreaded jaws of the sharks, and Stubb was lustily singing out for someone to ladle him up, and while the old man's line, now parting, admitted of his pulling into a creamy pool to rescue whom he could, in that wild simultaneousness of a thousand concreted perils, Ahab's yet unstricken boat seemed drawn up toward heaven by invisible wires, as, arrow-like, shooting perpendicularly from the sea, the white whale dashed his broad forehead against its bottom and sent it, turning over and over into the air, till it fell again, gunwale downwards, and Ahab and his men struggled out from under it like seals from a seaside cave. The first uprising momentum of the whale, modifying its direction as he struck the surface, involuntarily launched him along it, to a little distance from the center of the destruction he had made. And with his back to it, he now lay for a moment slowly feeling with his flukes from side to side. And whenever a stray oar, bit of plank, the least chip or crumb of the boats touched his skin, his tail swiftly drew back and came sideways, smiting the sea. But soon, as if satisfied that his work for that time was done, he pushed his pleated forehead through the ocean, and trailing after him the intertangled lines, continued his leeward way at a traveler's methodic pace. As before, the attentive ship, having descried the whole fight, again came bearing down to the rescue, and dropping a boat, picked up the floating mariners, tubs, oars, and whatever else could be caught at, and safely landed them on her decks. Some sprained shoulders, wrists, and ankles, livid contusions, wrenched harpoons and lances, inextricable intricacies of rope, shattered oars and planks, all these were there, but no fatal or even serious ill seemed to have befallen anyone. As with Fadallah the day before, so Ahab was now found grimly clinging to his boat's broken half, which afforded a comparatively easy float. Nor did it so exhaust him as the previous day's mishap. But when he was helped onto the deck, all eyes were fastened upon him, as instead of standing by himself, he still half hung upon the shoulder of Starbuck, who had thus far been the foremost to assist him. His ivory leg had been snapped off, leaving but one short, sharp splinter.
"Aloft there! Which way?"
"Dead to leeward, sir."
"Up helm, then. Pile on the sail again, shipkeepers. Down the rest of the spare boats and rig 'em. Mr. Starbuck, away and muster the boat's crews. Let me first help thee toward the bulwark, sir. Oh, how the splinter gores me now! Accursed fate, that the unconquerable captain in the soul should have such a craven mate. Sir, my body, man, not thee. Give me something for a cane. There, that shivered lance will do. Muster the men. Surely I have not seen him yet. By heaven, it cannot be. Missing? Quick, call them all.
The old man's hinted thought was true. Upon mustering the company, the Parsee was not there.
The Parsee, cried Stubb. He must have been caught in... The black vomit wrench thee. Find him. Not gone, not gone.
But quickly they returned to him with the tidings that the Parsee was nowhere to be found.
Aye, sir, said Stubb. Caught among the tangles of your line. I thought I saw him dragging under. My line. Gone. Gone? What means that little word? What death knell rings in it that old Ahab shakes as if he were the belfry? The harpoon, too. Toss over the litter there. Do you see it? The forged iron men. The white whales. No. Blistered fool. This hand did dart it. 'Tis in the fish. Loaf there. Keep him nailed. Quick. All hands to the rigging of the boats. Collect the oars. Harpooners! The irons! Hoist the royals higher. A pull on all the sheets. Helm there! Steady for your life. I'll 10 times girdle the unmeasured globe. Yea, and dive straight through it, but I'll slay him yet!